Welcome to the More Sense Than Dollars podcast. We're your hosts, Nick and Harry.
Welcome back, everybody. We got another season of More Sense Than Dollars. Season 7. Ready for this one, Nick?
It just keeps going.
It keeps on going. We got a whole lot of good episodes queued up this season. And we're starting with, as you probably saw in the episode title, a revisit of the flowchart, the income flowchart, going all the way back to episode 4 when we first went through this. A lot has changed.
Listeners should remember, but things have changed since then.
The OGs will remember. Yes, things have changed both with us and with the flowchart itself. So we're going to go back to it, a little bit of flowchart 2.0.
And we're going to have a little more of a focus on the what to do with your goals money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just covered the retirement spending. You should be saving 15%. But what if that 20% of your budget is more money than it takes to match the or get to that 15% retirement savings goal? What do you do with the rest?
Yeah, it's based on, you know, getting the most for your money so that you're not putting things in it's an efficiency.
Yeah, it's just optimization.
Yes. So first, should we talk about our piece?
Yes.
It's not that controversial. We are planning a trip to Vegas, and we have both been upset at airline prices and the dynamic pricing of it all. The fact that any given day, the same flights to the same place are different based on whatever internal algorithm each of these airlines has. They get to just decide what the price is. And you come back another day and it's $100 more.
Yeah, and layer that on top of how the whole landscape has changed. And now, you know, Spirit, Ryanair, Frontier, Sun Country, is that the other one? Not that those are the only budget lines, but I expected from them to charge for the carry-on.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Those nickel and dime you charge to pick your seat, all those things. But all of them have started doing it.
Yeah.
An extra $80 or extra $100 for a checked bag. Or, I mean, sorry, extra $100
just for a carry-on bag. It used to be you pay for a check. No, it used to be you had a free checked bag. Then you had to pay for a checked bag. Now they're trying to get you to pay for a carry-on bag. Wild. And the price that they show you is always that lowest basic economy. You're the last person on the plane. You're going to have to sit in the aisle. You don't even get to pick your seat or bring a bag.
Right. And if you're traveling with a group, even if you book them together, they, at least I know like Spirit and Frontier, they randomize the seating.
Yeah, they don't
even
care.
Even if you're purchasing the tickets together. Mm-hmm. So like, they could just randomize it with those two people sat together.
Nah, they don't care.
Or it's an extra reason to convince you to pay more.
Right.
But
yeah, it's been bothering us. So we, instead of just whining to each other, we'd figured we'd complain publicly.
We have
publicly.
A bigger audience. That's to right. Whine to.
Okay. So to the flowchart. So we're going to do this through audio, obviously. If you can pull up the flowchart to follow along, we have the visual linked in the show notes. That may be a little bit easier, but we'll talk you through it first. I think part of it is knowing why, too. We'll go back on why it's set up this way. And then we'll get into a little bit more of that goals money that Nick was talking about. You know, you've already set up your budget so that 20% is going towards goals. And there should be a way of allocating that money as efficiently as possible. So,
yeah. And we've generally stuck to 50, 30, 20 as the framework for when we talk about any of these other related items. But like we did in the budget 2.0 episode, you know, if you are going with 80, 10, 10 or 80, 20 or 60, 10, 10, 10, 10, whatever your budgeting strategy is.
Yeah, good point.
This should apply. You just might need to use a different portion of the income or you know, modify it or adjust it to fit the amount that you are putting towards goals.
Good point. So I guess first, like, so this one is, it's a little bit more detailed. It's got easy to follow steps, you know, are you doing this, yes or no? But
yeah, we can probably move pretty quickly through this first portion and then spend a little more meat of the discussion on, you know, what to do after you've hit that 15%.
Yeah, they,
for retirement. So, but let's start from the beginning.
Yeah, so this flowchart comes from the personal finance community on Reddit, and it's organized by the most urgent needs first, like eating and paying your rent, and then moves out to less urgent. Not necessarily less important, just a little bit less pressing. Like, you need to eat and pay your bills today. The retirement savings come after that's, you know, established. So it starts with Nick's favorite thing, creating a budget. They've added that right in, because that should be like your given, your step zero of planning out your income.
Right. But if you don't have a budget, it's pretty much impossible to answer the questions you need to get through the flowchart.
Right.
You know, you don't know how much money you have available to put towards things. How can you figure out where to put it?
So there's an interesting split between, so we always said, you know, build out your emergency fund first, like 3 to 6 months. What about this split of having a smaller emergency fund and then going to retirement savings and back to emergency fund as the next step?
Yeah, I think it's really a matter of, or it's two things. It's, do you have the opportunity to take advantage of an employer match? And what is your risk tolerance level? So, and the reason I'm saying that is because the split is to get 1 month or $1,000 in your emergency fund first, whichever is greater. And then after you hit your employer match on the 401k, you could go back to increasing the, you know, your emergency fund, getting up to that 3 to 6 months. It's hard, and the reason that it's structured this way is because, like we've said before, that employer match is a 100% return on your money, which is pretty, you know, 100% guaranteed return is essentially impossible to get anywhere else. And that's really difficult to pass up.
Yeah.
So if you have the opportunity to guarantee a 100% match, if you're looking at it from a purely numbers perspective, it probably is worth putting your money towards that, even if you don't have the biggest emergency fund.
Yeah, because even if you did have to put some things on credit cards, if the 1,000 wasn't enough to cover it, credit cards somewhere between 15 and 20% interest, the employer match is 100%, 100 is still more than that, right?
Right. And there's a bit of a balance game there, right? You don't want to put yourself, you don't want to end up putting yourself into such a hole that you never get to the retirement and you can't use those retirement savings effectively. But if you have 1 month, that could let you weather some stormier occurrences in the meantime before you get back to building out that full 3 to 6 month emergency fund.
All right. So you've created a budget. You've paid your living expenses, your needs, basically, right? There's that. I guess that return is if we're going from highest return to lowest, that's kind of priceless, right? Your life is having a place to live and eat. That's important. So I've built out my small emergency fund, and then I've maxed my company 401k match.
Yeah. Say what next? They match the first 50% up to 6. That's kind of the standard. So say you got that 6% of your paycheck going to the 401k. Next thing you ask yourself is, do you have any high interest debt? And that's, per this diagram, anything higher than 10%.
Yeah, so that's probably credit cards, or hopefully you don't have any high interest personal loans or a car loan that's high. But
could be car, unfortunately. There's other ways. It's probably going to be credit cards, mm-hmm. right? If you're above that 10% mark, but anything that's above 10% is high interest debt. And so at this point, any money you have left over after contributing enough for that employer match should be going to pay off your high interest debt. And like we've talked before in the budgeting episodes, the minimum payments on that high interest debt should be coming out of that 50% portion of your budget.
Yeah, this is to actually chip away at.
Right. These extra, you definitely don't want to get behind on your payment. So that minimum payment is in your needs. And we're talking about, what do you do with the goals money that you have? If you have the option to throw some extra money above the minimum payment towards the high interest debt, definitely want to do that next.
You're getting a return. Don't forget, you're getting a return equal to the interest that you're paying on that credit card. So a 20% credit card, you have to think of it as, when I pay this off, I'm not spending the 20%. So I'm actually getting a 20% return on my money, which is high. That's why you got to start there.
Yeah. And I'll throw in something here too, because I'm quite familiar with the games that we can play with our brains to justify things. If you are on a balance transfer card, or if you're on an intro APR,
like a 0%
card, where they, yeah, say you have 0% interest for a year, do not call that 0% return on your money to pay it off as a way to justify not putting money towards it. If you're in one of those promo periods, you should treat it as if it has the APR it will have after that period runs out.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you do have that, you kind of have the benefit of getting that return on your money without actually having to pay that interest while you're paying it off. So,
yes,
a good position.
And sometimes, if you have any balance left after that promo period ends, there are situations where you can have the interest levied against you from the balance you carried during the promo period.
Yeah, that's no good.
Yeah.
Okay, so you pay off the high interest debt, then you can it's a good time to finish the emergency fund to have that 3 to 6 months, so that you don't have to go back to accumulating that credit card debt.
Right. The idea is that an emergency emergency is the most likely scenario to get into that high interest debt in the first place. So now you're putting in a buffer zone, so it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, good. Then
now,
what's next?
Get back to debt payments. So moderate interest debt. So this is going to be, we already took care of everything over 10%. This is going to be any remaining debt over 4 to 5% interest.
Yeah, they're excluding your mortgage, because that would be, if you'd never be able to contribute to your retirement accounts as much if you just kept putting all of your goals money towards your mortgage. So anything in that, 4, 5, 6 range, start paying that down.
Yeah, and mortgage debt is always treated a little differently, because you're generally building equity. And you're not just burning that money on a high interest debt. Even something like a car, which is obviously something you need and can facilitate your income, you're still going to lose money on that car over the life of your ownership of it. Your house is probably, except for some very unique scenarios, generally going to make money on your house. Mm-hmm. All right. So now we have, at this point, you're getting the employer match. You've paid off your high interest debt, your moderate interest debt. You have a 3 to 6 month emergency fund. What's next?
So now we're looking back at episode 60, the last episode of last season, about saving that 15% for retirement. So the question to ask here is, I've done all those things before. Start to think about IRAs, Roth and traditional IRAs, and max those out, because those have a lot of tax advantages. If you are, if you have your 401k, you're getting the employer match, then go back to the Roth or traditional IRA first and max those out.
But again, because there's a yearly cap on what you can contribute to an IRA, whether that's Roth or traditional, you want to take advantage of that when you can, because you can't go back and add more to it after the year is over.
Right. They're both lower caps than 401k, so might as well cap those out first.
Yeah, and that's a $7,000 limit as of 2024.
All right, so go there, max that out, and see, are you around... Are you at 15% of your pre-tax income going towards retirement in some way. That's 401k right. IRAs.
So at this point, right, it's that we're talking 2024 dollars. You say you have 7,000 going into your Roth or your IRA, whether that's Roth or traditional. You're getting that employer match on your 401k contributions. All of that added up, is it 15% of your pre-tax income?
If not, go towards 401k. Go with put the remainder into the 401k. You're not getting the employer match, you know, above and beyond, but there's still the tax benefits there. So go until you have 15% of your pre-tax income,
right,
across all those.
Because at this point, you're only contributing enough to your 401k to get the employer match. You can go up above that until you hit, again, the yearly limit, which for the 401k as of 2024 is $23,000.
All right. Now we start getting into the nice to haves, right? You've maxed out all of these things. You've maxed out your IRA and your 401k. Then where should we look? HSA?
Yeah. I mean, the next question to ask is, are you eligible for an HSA? And so again, you can only contribute to one if you have a high deductible health plan. You may be in a situation like I find myself in right now, where I do have an HSA from a former employer when I had a high deductible health plan and I contributed to it. That doesn't go away, but you can't contribute to it if you no longer have a qualifying health plan. So if you are currently using a high deductible health plan and are eligible to contribute to an HSA, you should start working towards maxing out those HSA contributions at this point.
Yep. Some good benefits with those.
And again, as of 2024, for a single person, you can contribute up to $4,150 to your HSA.
Cool. So at that point, you've got your HSA full, your 401k maxed out, your IRA maxed out, your emergency fund, your debts paid off.
You may not be maxed out on your 401k at this point.
Oh, right, because you're at 15%.
Right. You only are increasing the 401k contributions if you're already at that 15% pre-tax. Because like we said, there are other options that are a little more optimal, a little more efficient than maxing out your 401k at this point. So one of those is the HSA if you're eligible. Because that's triple advantaged. That's triple tax advantaged.
Right.
You don't pay any taxes going in. You don't pay any taxes coming out. You don't pay any taxes on the growth.
That's pretty nice.
It's pretty nice. It's just more limited in what you can spend it on. Although once you get to a certain point, an age, it does act like a more traditional retirement account.
Nice.
You can spend it before you hit retirement age, though, which is a difference on qualifying medical expenses.
Right.
All right. So now we're maxing out the HSA. We're doing really well.
Yeah, you're in a very good place if you're getting this far down the flow chart. Starts to get into personal preference after this. I think, like, if you have kids, you might want to look at, and you might want to pay for some of their college. There are 529 plans or some sort of savings or investment account for them.
Right. But
I don't know. I think down this far at the bottom, you could think about, do you want to retire early, put some more towards your 401k or IRAs, backdoor IRAs, teaser for a future episode. Or I don't know, any other sort of brokerage account or shorter term savings goals, trips, things like that.
Yeah, this gets a little interesting because if you're at this point in the flowchart, you are doing quite well, right? The only reason to continue increasing your retirement contributions would be to retire early. But you may not be planning to retire early. And so at this point, I know we've really espoused the 50-30-20 budget, but you may get to a point, and if anyone listening, if either of us ever get to this point, we would be quite blessed. Oh, but you could get to a point where 20% of your income is too much to be putting towards your goals.
Yeah, that's true. You'd have maxed all these things out, and then
right.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe you're in a very lucrative career. You are already all set for the future. Instead of putting more and more money towards your, you know, retirement years, you could start using some of those to save towards things more in the short term.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that could be second, third homes, vacation homes,
yeah,
nicer vehicles. Maybe you do choose at this point to start paying down your mortgage early. You like the idea of not having that mortgage just hanging.
Whatever gives you peace of mind, I guess. Yeah.
Vacations, anything. And again, you shouldn't, if your income keeps going up, you want to make sure you're still balancing everything. But this far into the journey, you definitely have a lot more options.
Yeah. And that's the goal, is to make your way down the flow chart. If you can get towards the bottom, you've done a lot of things right. You're definitely set up for success and on a path towards retirement and having all of your goals covered. So
you'll know if Harry and I make it there, because the podcast will stop.
Yep, yep. We'll be on a tropical island somewhere.
Maybe not, though. Keep sharing the good word.
Right. We'll tell you what it's like at the bottom of the flow chart.
So, like I said, we're definitely not at the end here. Everyone's kind of on their own journey in a different spot, but this should give you, even if you're not at some of the later steps, give you an idea of how to think about where you spend that 20% goals portion of the budget.
Yeah.
I always liked, you know, even before getting to the position financially I'm at now seemed like a you know, fantasy.
You never thought you'd get as far down as you have.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, but even then it was great to already be reviewing some of these things and, you know, knowing what to do when you get to a situation before you're in that situation is ideal. You don't want to get thrown into a new chapter of your life and be totally lost about what to do. You can prepare for that ahead of time. So even if you're not quite at some of these later steps yet, it's definitely still valuable to understand what you would do at that point.
Yeah. So look at the flow chart itself in the show notes. Check off where you're at. See how far down you are now and start to progress. And if you have some things out of order, think about going in this order, because this is, you know, the most return to the least return. So could be a little bit more efficient than the order you're doing it in.
Yeah. Ask yourself why you're in that order.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, this is a guideline. This isn't etched in stone. This isn't necessarily the 100% best way to do things in all situations. So maybe just use it as an opportunity to ask yourself, oh, it says to do it this way. I did this. Maybe, you know, did that make more sense in my situation? Or
right.
Should I have done it this way? You know, try to apply some sort of critical thinking as you go through this.
Let us know if you have any questions about, you know, something that a gap that we might have left out, or should I do it in this order or this order, and we'll help answer. All right. That's another one. Season's kicked off. Thanks so much for listening, everybody, and we will see you in the next one.
You've been listening to the More Sense Than Dollars podcast.